You're listening to a CNA podcast.
It's no secret that Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi wants a third term in office, but a tractor or two, or maybe a few thousand, could block his way. For more than a month now, thousands of farmers have been protesting in India, demanding higher and guaranteed prices for their crops and driving their tractors towards New Delhi. So far, they've been blocked by police 200 kilometres from the capital. But here's the problem for Mr. Modi. Farmers make up 40% of India's voting bloc, and elections are expected to be held between April and May. You're listening to CNA Correspondent, a podcast usually hosted by my colleague Teresa Tang, who is away this week. I'm Arnold Gay, and today we journey to the Shambu border in Punjab with India correspondent Rebecca Bundan. Rebecca's been meeting and talking to demonstrating farmers to try and understand why they are so upset. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start by asking you about your time in Shambu. I know you're back in Mumbai now, but I'm very curious to know, you know, what you saw, what you heard. In particular, I mean, I hear words being used like broken promises and betrayal. Can you describe, you know, what it was like when you were there with the farmers?
Yeah, so I've covered a lot of protests over the years, including farmers' protests. And normally what we see is they're kind of one-day affairs, or they last for a few hours. The farmers will come in, say, to Mumbai, for example, stage their protests and then go home. But one of the big differences with this one is that the farmers at the Punjab border were clearly in this for the long haul. So their plan was to march to Delhi before they were actually stopped at the border, about 200 kilometres from the capital. They were stopped by security forces, hit by tear gas and rubber bullets and so on. And then they were just kind of stuck at the border when we met them, and where they still are, in fact. And they've actually kind of set up their own little village there, because they've come with their tractors, their trailers, their tents and everything, with the plan to go into New Delhi and actually camp there to stage their protest. They'd also even brought their washing machines with them, medicine and everything. So clearly they're planning a very long demonstration. And that really reminded us of what we saw in 2020 and 2021. If we look back then, there were these unprecedented farmer protests that were staged in New Delhi when farmers marched from the northern states right into the capital. They set up camp there. They were in fact there for a whole year. They even started farming on the highways to make their point. So those were incredible scenes, and they gained so much international attention. But clearly, at this time, the government, security forces, they were prepared, and they really wanted to block the farmers from going into the capital. So that's really one of the differences we've seen between this protest, other protests, and also those protests of 2020 to 2021 as well. Now, the farmers here were really talking about the fact that this is all linked to those protests back in 2020 and 2021. They were staging demonstrations at that time because they wanted three new farm laws to be scrapped that the government had introduced. And actually, they were successful. After a year, they managed to get Modi to actually repeal those farm laws. But at the same time, they said that they were promised that the government would also look at introducing a legal guarantee on minimum support prices, which is state-set minimum prices that they would get for their crops. And they want this introduced across all crops. But they say that they were let down on that. And it's not only that. They say that the Narendra Modi government has made a lot of promises over the years, that they really voted Modi to power, and they feel that he hasn't delivered. There was one farmer in particular I spoke to, Isan Murugasamy. Although most of the farmers were from Punjab, he'd actually come up from Tamil Nadu in the south of India, and he really wanted to make his voice heard. And he talked about how he felt really let down by Mr. Modi.
2014, the entire farmers are voting the Modi because of his promise. He failed. Again, we are voting in 2019 also, but that time also, this time also, he failed. So we betrayed. We are cheated.
And other farmers also had similar things to say to him as well. But the other point is that analysts and even some of the farmers, what they said was actually a lot of these problems that are in the farming sector, they're not only linked to this Modi government, that he can't necessarily be blamed for the deeper crisis that exists. They say that this is something that's been taking place for decades.
Rebecca, I'm curious, how did the farmers react to your presence? I mean, you were there and spent a bit of time with them.
Yes, that's right. And we were concerned before we went there because we did wonder how would they react? Would they be hostile towards us? But in fact, when we went there, they were really very welcoming indeed. In fact, they were offering us tea, coffee, food all the time, really friendly and really curious as well. They wanted to know the story that we were doing. Whenever we were doing interviews, there would be this big group of farmers that would gather around and listen in to the conversation. So they seemed quite excited and interested to have us there. And I think that reflects the fact that they really do want their cause to be heard, that they want this to be highlighted, that they're saying that farmers are struggling. And the idea of those protests as well, especially with the planned march to Delhi, which got stopped, the idea is that they want a big stage for their protests and their concerns.
I'm curious, Rebecca, what kind of preparations do you and the team make? It's a little bit far from the capital, 200 kilometers, I believe. Did you have, I guess, communication links? Were they available to you? Power, was it available to you as well?
Definitely a difficulty. And one of the big worries before we went was the fact that there had been these clashes between the security forces, the police and the farmers. Just days before we went there, there had been some major clashes. In fact, one farmer was killed at the border. Several farmers were injured when they clashed because the police had been using tear gas. The farmers had also been throwing rocks at the forces. So there were really violent demonstrations. And we were wondering, like, would we see this kind of violence? Would we need protective gear like gas masks, even bullet vests, because the police have been firing rubber bullets, just all of that, a helmet even. We really wondered about what we'd encounter there. Fortunately, it turned out to be very peaceful when we were there, in fact. But these were the concerns we had also about communication. When we got there, we did notice that it was very hard to get internet access. So some of the networks appeared to have been blocked completely. Perhaps there were some kind of jammers. So that was difficult. We actually ended up having some walkie-talkies with us in case we didn't have any connectivity and we got separated. So it was that kind of situation. There was actually quite a bit of power there. The farmers were actually, as I said, they were running things like washing machines. So they seemed to have a supply of power. So that was available, but connectivity was a challenge.
Right. Rebecca, I want to ask you about what some critics have been saying about the farmers' demands. I mean, they say, look, you know, price support subsidies are something which, you know, will distort the market. And I'm sure, you know, farmers are aware of some of these criticism. What are they saying in response, though?
Yes, that's right. And economists would say that it is something that potentially distorts the market if you set these minimum support prices for crops. And also there's the fact that can feed into food inflation, which is already a big challenge in India as it is. So that's one of the issues there. What the farmers are saying, however, is that the income of farmers across the country is so low that something needs to be done to increase that income. How do you lift farmers out of the crisis? And that was one of the analysts we spoke to said as well, that he said the farming sector is facing a massive problem because although, you know, almost half the population depend on agriculture for their livelihoods, the contribution as a percentage to GDP has really come down a lot over the years. And farmers are really, a lot of them are earning less even than daily wage workers, for example. So that's what farmers are fighting for, the fact that they say they need a better income. What the farmers that we spoke to in Punjab were also saying. Now, Punjab is a state where they grow a lot of wheat and rice, and they're heavily dependent on this minimum support price, which is why they want that legal guarantee on it. Now, they're saying if they were given minimum support prices for all crops, which is what they're campaigning for, that would then allow them to diversify to other crops. And at the moment, there's a challenge that just growing rice and wheat largely is affecting the soil, it's draining the water resources. So, you know, it could be good for them to diversify, and that could also help their incomes. There was one farmer I met in particular, Vijinder Singh. He was at the protests and we also went to his farm for him. And he talks a lot about the fact that farmers' incomes just need to be raised.
It's very difficult to do farming in India. As you can see, we don't have the right equipment that we need because they are very expensive. There are farmers who only own 2 to 4 acres of land and they can't afford it.
He was actually a relatively well-off farmer. He had 40 acres of land, but still he's saying that he's struggling. He has a lot of debt. And he said that the smaller scale farmers really struggle even more.
Which brings me to the next question, Rebecca. I mean, some are saying, look, it's really the big farmers who are going to benefit if there's going to be price guarantees. They're going to get even richer, while the smaller scale farmers are going to, at best, you know, benefit at the margins. Is there any truth to this assertion, this claim?
It is interesting to see that these protesters in this demonstration are really largely the farmers from Punjab. Now, Punjab is a wheat and rice growing state, and those crops are really heavily supported by those minimum support prices that the protesters really want, sort of enforced legally and across all crops. What the farmers say is that it won't only benefit those farmers in Punjab, but they say that if all farmers across the country who grow every single kind of crop could ensure that they get a guaranteed state minimum price, that would actually benefit them, that would help to improve their incomes. You know, analysts also say, yes, the sector is struggling. Clearly, there are a lot of small-scale farmers who would not earn enough money. They don't even cover their costs, let alone be able to pay off the loans that they've built up over the years. There's also the fact that we have to remember that there were those three farm laws that were introduced by the Modi government that have now been scrapped. Now, the government had said that if those laws, the idea behind those laws was that if they were introduced, they would actually help to improve farmers' incomes. They would try to cut out the middlemen, allow farmers to sell their crops more widely outside of the government market. So there's also a question there about whether those laws might have actually helped farmers to improve their incomes.
Rebecca, it's been over a month, as you outlined earlier, and the previous protest that you mentioned as well, I think lasted for a year. So the whole process, you know, potentially could be slow. It seems a bit slow now. I'm curious, who's actually driving the negotiations? Is it actually happening?
Yes, well, what we saw when these protests first started back in February was there seemed to be a flurry of activity from the government, because we saw several rounds of talks between the farmer unions and the government. And these were being held with the agriculture minister, the trade minister, and they were actually traveling into Punjab, meeting the chief minister there as well, and holding these talks. But I mean, after several rounds of talks, there was just no progress. Nothing was agreed on. I think the government made a couple of offers and the farmers just weren't interested. Mm. And now when we spoke to the farmers, what they were saying was, you know, we're waiting for the next round of talks. We haven't been invited. We're ready to talk to the government. But it sounded like things have really slowed down now, and the government even has backed off a bit. The farmers are now stuck at that border of Punjab with the state of Haryana. They haven't been allowed to progress to New Delhi. They're kind of stuck there. And it does sound a bit like, from what the farmers were saying, that the government has kind of lost interest in this now, or they're happy that the farmers are just there and not in the capital.
Right. I want to circle back to what you mentioned earlier about expert committees. This was set up, I believe, during the previous protests. I mean, expert committees on MSPs. What's happened to them?
Yes, that's right. So once the government agreed to roll back those three farm laws, one of the promises certainly was that they would set up an expert committee to look at these MSPs, or minimum support prices for crops. Now, that did actually happen. After a few months, the government set up that panel. And what they started to talk more about, though, it seems, was creating transparency, efficiency for MSPs, but not necessarily like referring to that legal guarantee, which farmers thought they had been promised. They said, we'd been promised that there would be a legal guarantee on minimum support prices for all crops. But that seemed to kind of fade away in terms of what the government was interested in doing. And then since then, we've kind of heard comments from officials where they talk about this not necessarily being economically viable to introduce those kind of guarantees, because it would actually come at a huge cost to the government's finances.
Right.
That's basically introducing subsidies, and it's expensive.
Okay. Rebecca, there seems to be quite a bit at stake for both sides, but in particular for Narendra Modi, because elections are not very far away. I'm wondering, what's going on here? He needs the farmers' vote. And obviously, you know, the farmers realize this as well. Why has the government's position hardened, if anything, as you kind of briefly mentioned earlier?
Yeah, so certainly the timing of these protests is no coincidence. We've got general elections coming up. They're just around the corner. And farmers know that all too well. Now, from what we're seeing, these protests have been much smaller. Say, for example, we compare them to the 2020-2021 protests. They're on a much smaller scale because actually there were dozens of unions that joined that protest and actually demonstrated for those farm laws to be rolled back. However, in this case, it's really only two farm unions that are behind the latest demonstrations, and they haven't really managed to get all the other unions on board. So that means that it's been a bit more limited. The government also doesn't really want to necessarily give in, because they are saying, what we've heard from some officials in the media is that they believe that it's just not viable to introduce these MSPs across the board, that it would have a negative impact ultimately, that it would be too costly. Also, I mean, the fact that probably for Mr. Modi, even backing down on those farm laws back in 2021, that was a massive thing. Nobody actually thought that he would back down, but he did. So at this point, ahead of general elections, would he want to appear weak? That's another question. It's interesting as well that Punjab is the only state in India that has a Sikh majority. Whether that has any significance, we don't really know necessarily, but it's an interesting point to raise.
Rebecca, what do you see happening next? I know this may be a big ask, but we are hearing things like farmers getting ready to descend on the capital in New Delhi by bus, by train, by air, any means apart from being able to drive with their tractors. I mean, how do you see this ending?
Well, actually, the farmers that we met, what they were saying is they don't want to go to Delhi unless they can take their tractors and the trailers with them, because they want this demonstration to have a full effect. And also, just in practical terms, they want to be able to take everything with them so they can camp there for a long time. So they said, even if we're allowed to walk to the capital or go on train or whatever, we don't want to do that. We want to take our tractors with us. We want to have a big demonstration there. We want all our stuff with us. So they said if they were to go by other means of transport, they would feel like they were giving in to the government. So they said they don't want to do that. But the problem is, if they don't move from the border now, it's kind of limited visibility for them. If they go into the capital, then definitely it becomes a huge thing and everybody knows it's going on and it becomes an even bigger story. And then that really puts pressure on the Modi government ahead of the election. So what some analysts were saying is that if this doesn't happen, if more unions don't really join, then it could just end up fizzling out.
Well, Rebecca, we leave it there. And thank you so much for joining us on this podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Catch reports from all our correspondents on CNA's YouTube channel and CNA.asia. And a reminder that the TV episodes of CNA Correspondent air every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. The team behind this week's edition is Sai Yi Win, Clara Ong, Crispina Robert, Craig Dale, and myself, Arnold Gay. Thank you very much for joining us.